Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, AD of Ministry Placement, Ross Ferguson.
That is me.
Yeah.
Question about the author in residence. I've said this to you before.
Okay.
No one actually understands what that means.
Sure.
Just means you write while living here.
I think that's what it means. Literally living in the seminary, but yeah.
What's the next author in residence project? What's the next thing coming up? Are you allowed to release any of that information? Do you have some ideas?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so I have a book that's already done. It's, you know, saucered and blowed, as they say, across the pond.
I've never heard that.
So there was a deacon once who said saucered and blowed. And I was like, what in the world does that mean? I did exactly what you just did. And he says it means like, the tea is on the saucer and you've blown on it to cool it down.
It's
ready to drink.
In Scotland, just about anything can mean drunk. And that's what it sounded like.
No, that would be sauced.
Okay.
Probably not saucer.
You can say anything in Scotland for that.
No, so I have a book on pastoral mentoring that'll come out. It actually, when I say it's ready, I'm done with it and they're done with it, but it's going to come out, I think, next year.
Okay.
Is the plan from Lexham Press. And then I just got yesterday a contract for the next writing project, which will be a book on midlife.
Oh, yeah.
A book for middle-aged men, basically. People like me. Not you quite yet, Ross.
Quite.
But getting there.
I got a decade.
Well, one of the theses, as I talked with different publishers, we were pitching this project around. I had some meetings at TGC, and everyone was kind of agreeing that middle age is starting earlier.
When are we starting it?
Well, they would say late 30s, I think.
Whoa, no.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and the reason is because there's such a generational consciousness now and the way that things are changing so rapidly with social media and the internet natives and all that sort of thing.
I'm thinking most people live into their 80s. That means you have to be over 40 to be midlife.
So anyone who identifies, so it won't be for you.
Oh, you're using that language.
Identifies as midlife, we can do. I want to let our listeners know we've got a big announcement. And when I say big, I mean big announcement. I don't mean like we're giving away a t-shirt or something. I'm not going to say stupid. I almost said something stupid like that. And then most of them be like, hey, will you give away these t-shirts? No, it's a big announcement. Stick around to the end of the episode for that big announcement. But I have a beef also.
Oh, we haven't had a beef for a while.
I know. It's a recurring, Jared's, but well, we've kind of, and on the pet, somebody asked about pet peeves recently or something like that. And you said, we just weave them into every episode rather than doing an episode of pet peeves.
There's always something we're frustrated
with. We're always like sharing our pet peeves. But I thought this morning, man, I haven't done a beef for a while. And my beef is, so I always get this iced coffee.
Mm-hmm. Decaf.
Decaf iced coffee. And I always get it at Starbucks. Well, not always, but. And I can't figure out, sometimes they automatically sweeten it, which I don't want.
Okay.
And sometimes they don't. So the normal thing is they don't. But every now and again, I can see them, pumping that liquid sugar into it. And I'm like, I don't like that. And so I have to take it back and it's a whole thing. I'm like, I didn't want this sweetened. So I wish they would figure it out.
Mm.
Is coffee supposed to come automatically sweetened? I don't think so.
Could you not just tell them when you order, please don't put any sweet stuff in it?
Okay. See, that sounds really simple, but I'm trying to be kind here. If I use the word sweeten, even if the word un is before it, I think sometimes it triggers ears to sweeten it.
So,
I don't even want to approach the topic because I don't want to put it in the...
Well, you just need to be more expressive. It needs to be like...
I want no sweetener.
It needs to be unsweetened nada. Don't touch the thing with any sweetener.
Yeah. A raving lunatic is basically what you're saying.
Do you know, I once used a phrase raving lunatic in a sermon.
Yeah.
It did not go down well.
Oh.
It did not go down well because I said it three times.
Okay.
And this particular church had very loud speakers. And so a Scotsman shouting fairly loudly, raving lunatic on repeat from the pulpit didn't go down amazingly well.
Why? I mean,
I was describing that Christians were raving lunatics on social media.
Oh.
And
I thought you said like somebody was going to object because lunatic comes from some pejorative for mentally ill people or something.
I think it was more just how hard I was being on Christians online.
Oh, so it wasn't anything about like my grandfather was an actual lunatic and was
no.
Okay.
I mean, you're getting close to the
my grandfather was affected by the moon.
I mean, you're getting slightly raving this morning.
I am, and I'm not even drinking caffeinated coffee.
Is this one right now sweetened?
No, it's not.
Okay.
But it just made me think of that because now I'm just nervous every time.
Okay.
So like Beck was with me recently and we ordered and I got one and I took a sip and it was so like syrupy sweet. Mm. I just was like, ugh. And I didn't finish it. Like I just set it aside and she's like, well, take it back. And I was like, I hate doing that. Because usually what they're messing up is they give me hot when I want iced and blah, 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 blah. And they always look like you've ruined their life when you bring this thing back. And like the thing costs $6. You know what I mean? Like if I'm going to pay $6 for a cup of coffee, I at least want what I ordered and not whatever you heard.
Here's the deal is that you're not actually saying unsweetened. So you're not actually saying what you want.
I guess so.
So this doesn't sound like a
beef. But this is my paranoia, man. If I say unsweetened, they're hearing sweetened. And
well, what's the difference?
You're assuming that these people at who work in anyway. I'm gonna be very
well.
I'm gonna stop because there are baristas probably listening that are like, oh yeah, the us people. What kind of people is that, Jared?
What I was thinking was the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different response.
Okay.
So have you tried something different rather than just assuming they're going to figure it out? Or are you moving to that insanity?
Well,
how about this? For the next week, say unsweetened and see how many times it comes out unsweetened.
Okay. I'll do that.
And then
that's actually a good experiment. Just give it a time
frame.
Just
give it a time. We're recording in a little while. So, maybe.
And since I said it, if it comes sweetened, I'll feel less bad about coming back going, I actually requested this unsweetened.
Do you know how many Twitter followers
I'm like so apologetic. It's so weird. Like I bringing it back and I just feel like if it's not too much trouble, I'm so sorry.
Could
you
just like
please
that.
Well, because I don't want them spitting it in or anything. Like, you don't know.
You should drive back around and went, do you not know who I am? I am the Jared C. Wilson. I want unsweetened.
You're you're the nerd who's always wants the stupid decaf coffee.
Have
in the
you
morning.
Not listened to FTC podcast? Here's a card. Listen to it.
Okay. Yeah, I could do that.
This doesn't sound
speaking
like a beef.
Speaking of
this
being a big deal.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know. That's the.
Well, maybe this
let's
is.
Let's talk about fallen pastors.
Okay. Average transition. The
guys
I'm
who. So it's not just big deals, but obviously our mind goes to the big deals on the drive in. Of course, I was kind of doing the laundry list in my head, but more famous, high profile in the last few years, Mark Driscoll and Tully Injavidian and Steve Lawson very recently as well, at least in relation to this podcast. And I thought we'd talk a little bit about not just, the celebrity falls, but probably among those who are listening, almost all of us would be, either, have had a pastor who disqualified themselves or just know of one, right? Be connected in some way. We both know a pastor who disqualified himself, at least one. And so this is a very common occurrence, even among those who are not celebrities. And I thought we could talk a little bit about why it happens and maybe preventative type measures. But the big question I think a lot of people ask, especially when our favorite author, speaker, conference guy falls, is can they be restored to ministry?
Yeah.
So that's where we're going to go, but we want to start with how in the world does this happen? Why would somebody blow up their life?
Well, I don't think anyone intentionally does it.
Yeah.
I don't think so we know that 1 Timothy 3 qualifications is the standard to what a pastor is to hold towards. And we know what we mean by fallen is that they essentially no longer equate 1 Timothy 3 to their life and ministry. And therefore, we deem them as fallen from those qualifications. I don't think somebody wakes up in the morning and goes, yeah, I'm done with 1 Timothy 3, death to that qualification. I don't think they choose to actively pursue against that.
Yeah.
From what I can tell, from those that I've been in contact, so I've actually been connected with a few guys that have fallen, it seems to be much more subtle. It's less a choice of I won't pursue 1 Timothy 3 qualifications and more I will give into this what seemingly seems a minor temptation. And what I mean by that minor temptation is it could just be that they didn't put $50 on their tax, or they have allowed an eye to wander to look at a woman as they walk down the street. And the reason I say minor is because these are the things that every day that you're just going, nope, I don't want to live like that. I'm living pure. I don't want to live like that. I'm living honest. But these small incidences pop up and their self-control has dissipated to the point where they actually give in to that temptation. But again, I don't think they even wake up in the morning going, I'm going to give in to temptation today. I think it's a subtle removal of the armor in that moment and falling into temptation. The question then comes to more, why do they fall into temptation again and again and again, which leads to a fallen pastor? Why is that singular temptation not stopped, confessed, and moved on? That's, I think, more the question.
Yeah.
Because I think every pastor is going to be tempted, and I think every pastor at some point is going to give into temptation. And I don't think we're saying he's then immediately out of ministry. I think we're saying now, but why would it continue? That's more the, I guess, the question I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, a lot of the research, or at least interviews with guys who, after the fact, after they've made a crater of their ministry and they're kind of doing postmortem on things, almost all of them will say, like, yeah, I was giving up inches at a time.
Yeah.
You know, I just started to slack off in this area of my life and that area of my life. And then eventually it just sort of snowballed. And yeah, I didn't wake up one morning and think, I'm going to blow all this up.
Yeah.
It was, you know, a drift over time. Yeah. And they just sort of, you know, began to medicate. I think that's sort of a, you know, you begin to think like, you know, I deserve this little treat, or I deserve to have this, or, and so, you know, I want to point folks to, I wrote an article for FTC, the website, way back. It's called How to Fall in Ministry and What Happens When You Do, or What to Do When You Do, How to Fall in Ministry. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I, you know, my first sort of step was like, okay, if you're aiming to fall, what would your first step be? And, you know, the first step that I sort of posited was let position or power go to your head. But I'm also thinking for a lot of guys, it's not position or power, because sometimes they don't have that, or, you know, they may have the lead pastor position or the pastor position, but they don't have a lot of power. It may be let a grievance or some sort of resentment or an inadequacy go to your head. And if you're not focused on the satisfaction of Christ, either you're on a narcissistic power trip, or you're on some kind of narcissistic pity party.
Yeah.
And you begin to think, in either case, I deserve these things. I deserve that. And then the second one, I think, is a big one, which is like, you know, stop investing in your marriage.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not pursuing your wife, if you're not pursuing romance with her, if you've put you know, the ministry over her and, you know, and your family, you know, there is a satisfaction to be found. And I don't just mean, you know, sexually, but there's a satisfaction in that relationship that God had, you know, has designed as a help to you and an encouragement to you and as a stability to you. And if it's you know, it's difficult, or it's complex, or it's a hard season, and you just begin to think that's too much, I'd rather focus on what I can get done in ministry. And you know, you're not beginning saying, I'm going to go have an affair.
Yeah.
You're just saying, man, it's a lot easier to get my hands into this ministry stuff.
Yeah.
I can accomplish things by the end of the day. There's more, you know, satisfaction there, or feedback there, whatever it is. And you just kind of set aside working on your marriage or investing in your wife. And that is a way to begin giving up ground as well.
Yeah. We can actually see this in other careers. So this is quite common in the police, where you're doing good work. You know, I've got to save people, I've got to protect people. And that good work is then compared to your marriage and family. You know, what do you expect me to do? I can't save people and be at the soccer field and watch the kids.
Right. Like,
and you compare one and the other, but what you're actually doing is you're elevating one job, you're elevating one position over the other. And I think that happens quite a lot as pastors. I know I've done that in the past. I know that was my temptation of, you know, what am I meant to do? I've got three, you know, members in the hospital. I got to go and visit them all. So no, I won't be at home to tuck the kids into bed. And on a one occasion, those things are okay. But as they begin to build as a pattern, and I think that's the thing, is that if you find your, I liked how you kind of said the pity party, because I don't think that's what we think at the time when pastors are beginning to fall, they think they deserve it. I remember a season in my ministry where I used to go, you know, I work 7,500 hours a week. I'm allowed to be like this. And that was related to food. I'm allowed to eat whatever I want because, frankly, I don't do anything for me. And then you start right. building this kind of world. And all the guys that have fallen that I've been connected with have all had something like that. They've all had either, you know, a relative die, or they've had marital problems, or overworked, or stress, or even just they're struggling to preach every Sunday. Like the inspiration's not coming, or they're just feeling really self-conscious about it. And so they medicate that with well, you know how hard this is? I'm going to do this. And in some senses, it's that big red button that's right in front of you. That's how I kind of phrase it, is you've got this massive red button and you're just constantly tempted as a pastor to press it. And without self-control, that finger gets closer and closer to the red button. And the things like a healthy marriage, a good eldership around you, not getting into your own head and thinking you're a big deal, removes your hand away from that red button and to some extent gives you distance. And I think all pastors need to realize we all have the option of pressing that red button, and we're trying to create distance with the things the Lord will give us to guard us from that. But sometimes that pressing that red button's a big temptation.
Yeah.
And what you don't realize is, as you're saying, giving up inches, it's those things that move your hand a little bit closer to that red button. And then when you're there, it doesn't seem odd to smack it and go into blowing everything up.
Yeah, you maybe become so numb to the consequences because you've just sort of been, you know, sedating yourself over time through these little doses, and or you just need a bigger high to feel more satisfied or something. You mentioned, you know, a plurality of elders and, you know, I think friendship as well. Like, so the third step for me in that article is, isolate and insulate yourself.
Yeah.
And that's true, you know, for the guy who's like really quarrelsome and sort of abusive with, you know, language and is disqualifying himself that way. It doesn't have to be sexual, you know, immorality. It could just be a guy like he's gotten, you know, so big in his own head that that nobody can tell him anything. And when you don't have people speaking truth into your life, and certainly I think for those who are, you know, engaging in sexual immorality or, you know, I don't know, greed, they're embezzling from the church or just whatever it is, they're not known, you know, they you know, tend to operate by themselves. And so there's no one who can provide them comfort, but no one also who can hold them accountable and speak to them in ways of equality. And so a plurality of, you know, a true plurality of elders where there is true parity, even if they're, you know, even if you're a lead pastor, that you've got guys who are authorized to speak into your life, who are authorized to ask, hey man, how's your marriage? You know, or even to say like, hey, we've noticed this pattern and, you know, we're not going to let this, you know, continue to go. You know, I think all those things are like super important. I remember, and this was, you know, almost 20 years ago, maybe about 20 years ago, when I was serving in church in Nashville, and we had a pastor who disqualified himself, not because of sexual immorality, but because of abusive leadership and those sorts of things. And this is before all that became like popular. This is before Mark Driscoll's, before all of that. And when I say popular, I mean like before it was in our consciousness, really. Yeah. And this church was not ecclesiologically or theologically very sophisticated. So I don't remember anyone ever bringing up 1 Timothy 3 or anything. Yeah. It just was like they finally had enough associate pastors quit and enough, you know, say he goes or I go, that they realize this is a toxic environment and we've got to get rid of this guy. And so, you know, the elders fired him. And then they did these like, you know, the congregation was, you know, kind of caught off guard by this. And it was a big, big church. And so they did these meetings where they're trying to, you know, lay out, you know, here's all the evidence and here's why we did this. And one person at one of these meetings raised their hand and said something like, why wouldn't any of his friends like speak to him about this? And the elder said, the guy's name was David. He said, Dave doesn't really do friendship.
Yeah.
And at the time I sort of clocked that as like, oh, like he doesn't do friendship. And man, that's just like stuck with me all these years later.
And I think one of the things that you can pretend is you can pretend I've got elders around me. See, you know, plural guys, they're keeping check on me. But there is a difference between we work together and actually we are in and out of each other's lives.
Yeah.
And we're open to that. So You know this as well as I do. That's harder in ministry because there is a huge potential to get hurt in terms of being a pastor that says, look, the doors are open. You're welcome to see in behind the scenes. And that can be abused. And sadly, it's abused a lot.
I'm interrupting our program to announce the winner of our Church Matters Journal giveaway, partnership with Nine Marks Ministries. The winner of a one-year subscription to the Church Matters Journal is Todd Smeltzer. Congratulations, Todd. And we want to thank all of our entrants. If you did not win, you can still get a subscription to the Church Matters Journal. All you have to do is go to ninemarks.org/churchmatters, ninemarks.org/churchmatters, and you can sign up for a subscription via the webpage. Church Matters is a quarterly journal. It's written by pastors for pastors. Each issue depends on the hard-won insights of 25-plus practitioner pastors and aims to equip, encourage, train, and support healthy pastoral ministry. And through this new subscription service, you'll receive each new issue at your doorstep before it is available for purchase as an individual issue. And additionally, journal subscribers will be invited to a quarterly video conference with the journal's editors to ask questions and further discuss topics covered in the latest issue of Church Matters. Go to ninemarks.org/churchmatters to sign up for your subscription to the Church Matters Journal.
And I think that gets into our minds of, well, if I open the door, I'm going to get hurt, so better to just keep the door closed and I'll keep connection. And I think you can't guard yourself from blowing up your ministry and doing something stupid by keeping people at arm's length. You have that. I hate the kind of phrase, but hopefully I'll kind of communicate what I'm saying here is, you know, better the devil you know than the devil you don't know. You know, like yeah. Kind of better the potential hurt by opening the doors than the almost guaranteed falling by keeping the doors closed.
Yeah.
And that's just something that you have to work through as a pastor, that willingness, because it's very few jobs have that, very few roles have the standards that pastors need to meet. And then the people that keep those standards have to be able to see everything. So just even recently I was talking to one church and they said that everything was going well with the pastor, but they were unaware that in a family situation in his marriage and how he is as a dad, it was just going disastrously wrong. And one of the things they said was, we had never really been to his home. He did all the meetings at church. They always came on Sunday. They always did Wednesday night activities. And they always put on a good show for those moments. And it turned out for like a year, 18 months, essentially the pastor and his wife were effectively separated, living in the same home because they hadn't let anyone in the home. They couldn't see the normal day operations. So again, it's that, I'm not saying you should have everybody out there, but there should be some people. And I would argue those people should be guarded as your friends. So, you know, as an example, you know, you might have three or four people that speak into your life. I don't think those three or four people then report to the whole membership or report to, all of your publishers or whatever. You need some unique people in your life that they know, to some extent, the dirt on you and can say, look, that needs to be dealt with. And I'm going to walk alongside you and I'm going to guard you and protect you. But we don't necessarily need to tell a million people about this. Do you know? Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense. But
no, it certainly does. Yeah. You know, depending on what
especially
it is.
If
it's like not reached the point of disqualification, it's a troubling pattern.
We're on those inches.
There's a relational thing, you know, happening here. Yeah. We've noticed that, can we talk about that? Or is this something to, you know, and I'd even say, and we probably, you know, I think we've discussed this before, you know, even if just offline, pastors who aren't necessarily disqualified, but because of a particular season of life or a situation in their family, we might want to say they're sort of, I don't know if unqualified is the word, but because there's a need at home that is so great, they may need to press pause and come out of the, you know, pastorate. And I think that's a little different. That's not someone who's disqualified themselves by their own character.
Yeah.
It's just, man, I've got a kid who's just like a prodigal off the charts you know, the presence that's needed of me is greater than ministry can afford right now, or, significant, thing in their marriage or something like that.
I mean, I would argue that's probably what I was when, I don't think I would have used that term then, but I think looking back, I think that's probably what I was when I arrived in Kansas City. I was exhausted. I'd worked 100-hour weeks. I needed a break. I remember saying to our pastor, like, I'm just going to sit in the back benches, so to speak, because I am almost so done with this. I can feel myself being frustrated with ministry.
Yeah.
And I just want to sit quiet, and I needed to be by my family side. And it wasn't that I was, quote, disqualified. It was more, it felt wrong to be mm-hmm. in a role. Here's my question, though, before we get to that kind of big question of, can they return? There is discussion about what type of disqualification. So you do have, I think we're seeing more and more of this kind of bullying, autocratic kind of dictatorship type disqualification. But we do definitely have in church a scale. Okay. You know, some people do like, he's just a hard leader, you know. How do we handle that thought process of scale? Because we kind of say, well, an affair, an extramarital affair, cheating on your spouse, well, that's like one end of the scale. And then on the other end of the scale, he tends to bully the assistant pastor. And that seems to be on the other end of the scale where we kind of go, well, assistant pastor, grow a thick skin, you know, deal with it. How do you deal with that scale? Because I think when we talk about fallen pastors, I think very few pastors we know will be doing what the big names are doing.
Yeah.
What do we do with the kind of, they've done enough inches that they're definitely on that line of disqualification, but maybe not so much that it seems like they've entirely blown up their life.
Oh, do you mean in terms of like the restoration question? Is it a shorter on-ramp?
No, I'm more meaning just like, how do we handle, like, how do we say to the church, it is a disqualification to be someone that is a bully? It is a disqualification. Yeah. And what most churches will do in those situations is they'll hold on to the pastor, and then they'll finally let it go. But if you said, well, he's had an affair, fired, he's out.
Yeah.
So how do we handle the fact that actually one can be not respectable, 1 Timothy 3, and therefore disqualified under respectability? We hold to the manage one's household, be a husband of one wife, as the standard for qualification and disqualification. But actually, respectability, self-control, and not being greedy, you know, not being quarrelsome. You know, how many of us know a quarrelsome pastor?
Right.
Therefore, he's disqualified.
He is, yes.
So, But churches don't like to disqualify someone over quarrels.
Yes. Well, I think the answer is not that we would, you know, lighten up on the bigger stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the quote unquote big stuff, but actually to take more seriously to say this person is disqualified. But that's also keeping in, you know, I think a proper evaluation of someone who is that's characteristic of them. Mm-hmm. They are a bully, not that one guy got his feelings hurt, you know, or that he lost his temper, you know, once, right? We all have lost our temper, you know, here and there. But it's like, this is a pattern. This is characteristic of you.
Yeah.
That's the disqualification is this is the culture of leadership he's developed at this church.
Yeah.
Everyone's afraid of him.
Yeah.
It's not just that one guy that he once, you know, was short with or, you know, lost his temper with. It's that guy multiple times and other people, and it's a string of,
bleeding out.
Yeah, it's repeated behavior. And I think churches ought to take that more seriously. I don't think we go, well, it's not like he had an affair. In fact, that's what this guy, the Nashville church guy, he called a press conference, like literally the news showed up and he did this press conference in a park because we had to do kind of a, I don't know if it's not restraining order, but like you can't enter the building type thing. And so he had some of his, you know, folks out in the parking lot handing out flyers, you know, Pastor Dave's going to be doing a press conference. And so I went to the press conference and he was like, he was basically saying, it's not like I cheated on my wife. Yeah. I didn't murder anybody, you know? And it's like, no, you've just been chewing and spitting up guys for the last, you know, 10 years or so. I mean, it was a long track record.
Yeah.
And I think they finally took it seriously. And
even the press conference is kind of hinting to
the
issues.
Don't want to minimize at all, like the significant impact and devastation on a family, on a wife, when a guy, you know, cheats on, especially if it's a pattern of affairs or long-term affair, but to somehow act like somebody who is abusive verbally and emotionally over a pattern of years is somehow less devastating, or at least wouldn't approach the level of devastation as someone who had an affair is, I think, to minimize the significance of that sin. It's still a violation of the image of God in someone else. You know?
Yeah, and I think that's exactly where Ezekiel 34 is going with the prophecy against the shepherds of Israel. And it's interesting that kind of the prophecy against them, you eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with wool, you slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. Mm. it's not here you had an extramarital affair. It's simply you put yourself first and others last.
Yeah.
It's a direct opposition to Philippians 2. Consider others before yourself. Think highly of others. Think them more highly than you even think of yourself. And that is a command in Philippians 2. And that's not even pastoral command. That's just a command to brothers and sisters in Christ. And I think that's the thing we need to probably realize is we probably have more fallen pastors than we realize.
Yes, I agree.
I think we see the public nature of an affair, and that also does the, you know, the whispers that go out, he had an affair, you know, that kind of goes out. But how many pastors do we actually realize that we know that are eating for themselves first, that are clothing themselves first, that are concerned about their own home, their own life, their own family far faster than the church? Now, that's not to say that you flip that and almost like are abusive to your family, because that in itself is also a qualification, manage your household well. It's that as you look at 1 Timothy 3, I agree with you, it's the pattern. And I'm aware of guys that have a pattern of being disrespectful. Hmm. That in itself is not a shepherd for the sheep. And I think when you read through Ezekiel 34 and that prophecy, it's very clear that this is less about the action and more about the attitude that produces the action.
Yeah.
Because as you say, I've definitely had moments in ministry where I've been frustrated and I've blown up a little bit after a ministry thing has gone wrong. And I've had to go like, I'm sorry. I hope you know that my character is not one that tends to do that. This is unique. And I'm going to have to backtrack and figure out what's just happened. But the right attitude will do that. The wrong attitude, it will just happen time and time and time again.
You know, so dovetailing into our, or sort of transitioning to our big question, I think what you bring up in terms of the scale or the difference in how we treat sexual sin versus how we may treat verbal sin or something like that is, you know, I think that's connected or related to the question, can a fallen pastor be restored to pastoral ministry? I think without question, you know, I would agree if someone is repentant, they can be restored to the fellowship. That's what repentant, you know, being repentant of sin, you know, that's a qualification for, you know, for any, you know, believer if the profession of faith is credible. So we're not talking about, you know, being restored to the church or to the fellowship or membership of a church, maybe not the same church, you know, depending on, you know, the sin, but, you know, not ruling that out. But we're talking about like to ministry. And what's really fascinating to me, but understandable, I'm not like, where did they get that from? But it's fascinating to me is people will separate out and say, can we restore pastors after sexual sin? As if the other disqualifications
are not as bad.
Are not as bad.
Yep.
And the answer is typically you can restore a pastor, a fallen pastor to ministry. You know, if they've disqualified themselves by, you know, being a drunkard or, you know, all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But if they've had an affair, if they've committed adultery, they cannot be restored to pastoral ministry. Yeah. And I don't know about you, like, I just don't see that in the scriptures.
Yeah, I think where people go is the husband of one wife. You can never restore that. That's, I'm not saying me, I'm saying that's what people are saying. If you have an affair, you can never restore that because you've gone to two women, but you can restore respectability, as in you can become respectable. You can restore self-control, as in you can become self-controlled in nature. And so they view that because you've gone to a second woman, you can never return to that husband of one wife qualification. And therefore they say you're out for good. And there's some big names that also view this. I know John MacArthur's a big view of this. Here's my deal with this. So I'll let the cat out of the bag. Can we restore them to pastoral ministry? Yes, but. That's kind of my viewpoint is a yes, but situation. And the yes, the but that comes in from this is we're always very quick to restore. That's what we want. We're like, oh, poor him, poor church, man. Let's do a year of restoration. I know for myself, coming from that kind of what we said, like unqualified, it took me a year just to kind of feel awake again and be out of the tiresome. And then it took me probably another year to work on some character traits. So a couple of years, and we're just talking about, I work too much, do you know? Like, and it took me a couple of years just to even filter that through my mind. So what I want to say is we shouldn't put a time limit on this.
Right.
But it shouldn't be early. And
I agree.
Early to me is, I loved how a pastor friend once said this to me, is when somebody looks at you and they don't even think of what happened in the past. Do you know, like, so if we say a pastor's had an affair, how long does it take for the church to look at him and not think, oh, he had an affair?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that is. Is that 5, 10, 15, 30 years? I don't know.
Right.
But there is a time period that occurs when people forget about that sin. And we all know this. We've all done this in our own lives where, you know, someone, you know, my wife, you know, I remember my wife saying, do you not remember we had that argument? I was like, I don't know, 14 years ago, I don't know. But clearly she still does remember that. There was a significant moment in our past. Okay, I've not gone long enough. So yeah. I want to say to that end that the first but is, how long has it been since the occasion?
Yeah.
And does it still impact how people view the person? Remember, the shepherd is the one to lead the sheep towards Christ. If they're still looking at that shepherd going, yeah, but, you know,
right,
he had an affair, can we really trust him? Then it's probably too soon to restore.
Right. Well, and that's why I think, you know, we're talking about the qualifications as characteristic of someone and why, you know, I would say, you know, if someone has committed adultery, it's not saying, well, now he's a two-woman man.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's, you know, characteristic of him now.
Yes.
But that's not to say, you know, it would be like saying if somebody, you know, was engaged in sexual immorality as a young man and then either, you know, got saved or just, you know, came back to the Lord. They were in a prodigal stage in their life and then they came back and they got serious about their faith and they eventually became more mature and felt called to ministry.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't go with that. Well, man, when you were a teenager, you know, you really messed around. So maybe some people would say that.
Some people would.
You shouldn't be a pastor. We would say, oh man, praise God that what you're known for today is not what you were known for before, right? Yep. So I think in the same way, you could say that about someone who had disqualified himself. But like you, I think what complicates this is so many, especially the well-known guys.
Yeah.
So many of them, they're gunning to get right back into that position, and I think they're afraid that they'll never be qualified again. And I think they've misplaced the goal.
Yeah.
The goal is not, and that's the problem I think with these, we've put them with, you know, through a 1-year restoration process. No, you started out by saying, we want to get you right back into that position.
Yeah.
No, like work with them with counseling, work with them, you know, to see, you know, their repentance, to, you know, restore them to the fellowship. But, you know, being a pastor again shouldn't be the goal.
Yeah.
Being a healthy Christian should be the goal. Being a you know, maturing believer should be the goal. Walking in humility, being a faithful church member should be the goal. To the point, and maybe it's a year, but probably longer, to the point where they're just known in their church as a faithful, godly person. Maybe that guy should be an elder, you know, where it's in the past, like you said, that it's not characteristic of them anymore. And I think guys, they won't have the patience. So many of them won't. Because they crave that position or that power or that, you know, whatever it is, platform, they crave that more than they crave being satisfied by Christ.
And you know how you tell that is I regularly keep in contact with a pastor friend who had fallen several years ago. And, you know, how's it going? Send a quick text. Everything's going well. You know, a bit of chat going backwards and forwards. And then it will always return to, I'm struggling a little bit in this job. It's been hard since coming out of pastoral ministry. And they're still feeling the weight of, I'm not a pastor.
Yeah.
As in, they have not found joy in just working every day with their hands. They have not found joy in being back with their family. Their personality, it's like an Eeyore personality now, because they put so much identity in the job that until they get that job back, quote, being a pastor, then life is never going to be as good. And you can tell that. You can tell that in the conversations with those pastors that have fallen. I think this is part of the issue that we had with Driscoll publicly. You know, big fall for Driscoll in terms of it was all over the press, lots of podcasts, all those sorts of things. And then a year later, he starts a church. I think even less than a year. Now, here's the deal. Even if he was not disqualified, like let's just go down that world that some people have maybe been harsh. It's just prudent to have time where the public negative flow of information is no longer in existence. And people are like, oh yeah, he used to pastor. Didn't something weird happen there? But it was so fresh. And I think that's the thing. So number one, I would say you got to give it time. You got to give it time to work those things out. And number two, I think it's wise not to be in the same church because I think there is then just a history. I think it's one of those things what you want to do is hopefully restore the pastor to membership. And then that membership watches that individual as a covenant member, takes care of that individual, and then is able to say to a new church, hey, this brother did have a fall, but this brother spent 5, 10, 15 years being a faithful church member. We have no hesitancy to say he's a quality guy following Christ and he should try again because we think he's called. I think that's a good thing. And then I think just third, the thing that's on my mind is there is a reality that if that character trait happened once, it may happen again. So I think I've rarely seen a workaholic become totally chilled out. I've rarely seen somebody who's had anger problems in their past never have anger problems in their future.
Yeah.
And what I say by that is not that we hold their sin over them. It's that if they are going to be restored to ministry, you got to make sure checks and balances are always there because that's clearly something in the past they have struggled with.
Yeah.
So if it's a self-control issue, maybe it's they don't have two phones, one work, one family. Maybe it just, no, we would like you to have one phone and we would like you to have software on it. And that's helping us, helping you not repeat past, you know, and to some extent, you just got to flow with that. If you're the guy that fell and is returning, you got to flow with some of those protections.
Yeah. Well, and that entails a level of humility and an openness. I mean, one way you know someone is repentant is they don't begrudge the consequences or they're willing to say, hey, this has been an area of weakness. So I want to be so above board because I want you to be assured that I am walking in faithfulness. You know, one of the things like, you know, you mentioned Driscoll again, you know, he just never admitted he did anything wrong.
No.
I mean, if anything, he would say, you know, that people took him, you know, as harsh when he wasn't, or that they mistook his leadership style or something, you know, for things that, you know, that weren't. But the evidence was so copious, and even just like sexual remarks, you know, to women and to husbands and about their wives. And just, I mean, it's just, it was such a toxic, toxic. And he just came out like, oh, they can't handle somebody who's blunt.
Yeah.
I was like, no, that's not what this is. And the fact that you cannot recognize or even admit or seek to make amends.
Yeah.
You know, I think about that with Tullian Trivijan, who just, you know, he spends all his time now on social media acting like a victim, this thing happened to him. Not that he had adultery with multiple women, not just one, but like was a serial adulterer and now is acting like all these graceless people who, you know, don't know how to forgive. And I'm like, no, man, you're not the victim here.
Yeah.
And the reason you can't be restored at this time is you're perpetuating your disqualification by acting in this sort of proud, self-centered, you know, poor me kind of way. I think we have the, you know, if someone's asking like, well, where in the Bible do we see the possibility of this restoration? I mean, I think Jesus restoring Peter is sort of like the big example in John 21. And, you know, is there anything worse?
Talk about blowing up
than
your ministry.
Denying Jesus. Yeah. I mean, that's worse than anything. And so we can see from Christ himself. Now, I've written another article. It's at 9 Marks called Can We Restore Pastors After Sexual Sin? Can We Restore Pastors After Sexual Sin? I'll put the link to that article in the show notes as well, where I kind of tease out, I respond to MacArthur. Mm-hmm. John Piper has some good words, I think, on this subject as well. It's a fairly long article, but I delve into John 21 as well and sort of extrapolate from that some principles for a process, perhaps, of restoration, or at least a case for restoration. But I think you and I would agree, not in every case, perhaps in some cases.
Yep.
The reason it doesn't seem to work out is guys rush it, they're proud, they're, you know, et cetera. But we want to make sure that so we're open to the possibility, but someone should be, they should meet those qualifications.
Yeah.
They should have the reputation of the qualifications.
Yep.
So whether that's 5 years from now or 10 years from now or 20 years from now, that's probably up to churches to decide. But yeah, we want qualified pastors, not disqualified pastors.
I agree.
Yeah. Big announcement.
We've done a long podcast.
They waited a long time through a heavy subject. For this big announcement. And the big announcement is that Ross is leaving us.
I am leaving the FTC podcast world.
Jared well, has, the Midwestern world.
Yeah. Jared has disqualified me. He's fed up with my voice. A few months ago, accepted a role at Midwestern. You'll have heard that on the podcast, but through the kind of spirit's prompting and through much prayer, I've actually decided to return to pastoral ministry, and I'll be returning as a senior pastor in a church in Canada, of all places. It'll be my fourth country I've lived in, a fourth country I've served the Lord in ministry. And so at the recording of this episode, we're making all our plans to move and return to pastoral ministry. So because of the distance, and obviously I won't be at Midwestern anymore after graduating and leaving my position, I will not be on the FTC podcast anymore.
Yeah, but we still got some episodes to go. You're not leaving immediately.
No, because you know, like all good Scotsmen, I hang around far too long. so I'll be here for a little while longer. But yeah, if you are a fan of FTC podcast, now is your time to give 5-star reviews, to laud my 100+ episodes. Mm. So over the next, 5-8 episodes, whatever we have left, we can read them out and Jared can be put in his place as the co-host. And actually everyone came here to listen to me. Yeah. I think I'm building myself to a big fall here. Maybe I need to come back from this. No, in all seriousness, I'm really excited to return to pastoral ministry. It's been a few years since I've been full-time in it. And I'm excited to serve the Lord again in that position.
Well, I'm excited for you. I'm proud of you. I know that this is something that you've been itching to get back in. It's you've been ready for a while.
I've been ready for
this
a while.
This isn't like happened in the last month. You wanted to do this, again. The Lord's hand is clearly on your life, not just in terms of giftedness, but because of this calling, it's been super obvious just knowing you for the last, few years about that. So I'm going to save all the mushy stuff. We're going to do a farewell episode some way down the line. So I'll save all that for that episode. But excited for you, sad for us. I'm anticipating a lot of reviews now with people like, freaking out about that. And just want to say, feel your pain, dear listener. If you enjoy the podcast, please give us a good review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.